The Bible says charity shall cover a multitude of sins, but a killer will settle for a dark night, a remote location, and the promise of a long, cold winter. In December of 1996, a trucker pulls into a rest stop in northern Ontario. First, he discovers it's closed for the season. Then he discovers something he was never meant to find. In true crime, investigation and conviction may take years. But every detective knows that the crucial clue is always there, somewhere, in the first 72 hours. A body has just been found north of Bracebridge, Ontario. Local detectives Dan Mulligan and Kelly Grubb are assigned to the case.
The area where it was placed, I know that area very well. At night, it looks like you're in the middle of nowhere.
We found a lady of East Indian descent. There weren't any identifying features whatsoever left on the body. There wasn't any jewelry. There wasn't any rings on her fingers. There wasn't any wallet or purse or anything identifiable of any nature whatsoever.
For the detectives, everything points to murder.
So the next stage was to send out a broadcast to police agencies throughout Ontario and Canada to identify who the victim is.
Mulligan and Grubb are the first detectives on the scene. They'll follow the case wherever it leads. Tonight, that means taking the body several hundred kilometers south to Toronto for an autopsy. Thanks to the cold weather, the body has been well preserved. Pathologist Martin Queen is able to identify a number of injuries.
There were several blunt force injuries. However, there were no classic defensive wounds. This suggests that the victim was involved in a struggle, but was not able to respond and defend herself.
On the victim's neck, there are abrasions. In her eyes, there is blood. The cause of her death is found to be asphyxia, due to manual strangulation.
Brownish stains were identified on both hands. The exact nature of these were not clear to me. However, they were swabbed for ultimate DNA examination. On the breast area, there were numerous very unusual skin lesions, which at the time of the autopsy, I could not clearly identify.
The detectives have the cause of death and some intriguing clues, but they don't know the victim's identity. A missing persons officer calls Grubb later that day and tells him to turn on the local news. A Toronto man seeks the public's help in finding Nandita Advani, his common law wife. He gives a detailed description of her that includes the jewelry she was wearing. He says Nandita went shopping 6 days ago and never came home. Mulligan and Grubb travel to Nandita's home in Little India. Their next step is a painful one, breaking the news of her murder to her common law husband, Shashi Sharma. Shashi Sharma's 25-year-old son, Junior, answers the door. He asked the detectives to wait for his father to complete his devotions. Junior says Sharma Sr. is a Hindu priest and a doctor of herbal medicine, a pandit.
A number of people in various cultures had considerable faith in the healing powers of a pandit. And people would come to him and pay him significant sums of money to perform this, what they called a puja. And that was this spiritual healing ceremony.
In different ways, both men are distraught to learn of Nandita's death.
Father had a certain aloofness about him, a very strong confidence. Junior, on the other hand, was extremely surprised when we informed him that we had just found the victim.
Do they know of anyone who might want to hurt Nandita? Both men say no, at least not anymore. Senior tells the detectives that before Nandita lived with him, she was married to an abusive husband.
He essentially pointed the finger in the direction of the victim's former husband, whom she had been separated from for approximately a 2-year period. He indicated that there had been domestic problems.
Sharma Sr. used the power and respect he commanded as a pandit to help Nandita leave the relationship. He took her into his home. Over time, love blossomed. For the past 2 years, they've lived together as man and wife. The detectives have one more request of the Sharmas.
Naturally, the current common law partner of somebody who's died of suspicious nature is an immediate person of interest.
They ask father and son to provide DNA samples.
They both, on their consent, provided us with saliva samples and readily did so. It was most definitely a learning experience for us. We don't have a lot of the East Indian culture in Muskoka, so we had to adjust to dealing with a new culture on a one-on-one basis.
Police interview Nandita's ex-husband.
The ex-husband was extremely concerned about the fact that we had found his former wife murdered. He was obviously saddened by that fact, and that appeared to us to be very genuine at the time. We confirmed his whereabouts during that given time period, and we were quite content with the alibi that he provided us with.
16 hours into the investigation, the police have no suspects.
We fan out and we interview as many people as possible in as short a time as possible, and we learn as much as possible.
We start conducting interviews with people trying to determine things like the last time the victim was seen.
The difficulties primarily involved communicating with a culture that traditionally not that forthright with police to begin with. By the same token, they rallied behind the victim. We found out that the victim was a very well thought of lady. She was friendly, she was regarded as, everyone called her auntie.
Police learned Nandita hadn't been herself lately. People around her put it down to the painkillers she'd been on since a recent car accident. Asked if anyone wanted to hurt her, no one speaks up. Apparently, people feel uncomfortable talking about a revered pandit's family tragedy. Except for one young man. He says he used to be Sharma Jr.'s friend. But that was before Jr. decided to show him his latest toy, a stun gun.
And he reached out and he nipped him with 50,000 volts very quickly. And he got the shock of his life. It leaves a tiny cigarette burn type of mark on an individual's skin when it's applied.
Mulligan remembers the marks on Nandita's body. Did Shashi Sharma Jr. kill his stepmother? If so, why? In Toronto's Little India, two detectives from Northern Ontario finally have a lead in the Nandita Advani murder case. Nandita's stepson is known to possess stun guns, the kind of weapon police believe the killer used in his attack.
So it was critical for us, at that point in time, to locate these stun guns.
The detectives arrive at Shashi Sharma Sr.'s house with a search warrant. The faith healer lets them in. He says Junior is away in Fiji. The detectives ask Senior to wait outside while they conduct their search.
During the course of our search warrant, we seized a large variety of apparent medicines, throughout the house.
Mulligan sends the drugs to the lab for analysis.
Junior's bedroom is locked up solid. We have the keys to that from Sharma Sr.
It was a normal the bedroom. It was very disheveled, mind you, and Nuria had a stereo system in there, a computer system as well.
Junior is a local computer technologist, so he's quite adept in electronics.
The detectives note something curious about Junior's setup.
He had the capability of flipping a toggle switch and being capable of listening to the phone conversation from a phone downstairs.
Whenever Mulligan searches a young man's room up north, he finds it pays to check the stereo speakers. It pays in Little India, too.
Two stun guns were wrapped up inside this plastic bag.
The detectives withhold news of their discovery from Sharma Sr. They don't want word getting back to Junior in Fiji. The stun guns are sent to an electronics specialist for analysis. One gun fails to function, but the other produces 50,000 volts from one 9-volt battery.
The local muscular contractions can be extremely powerful and extremely painful. So when the stun gun is being used for more than a few seconds on a person, it's really accounting for a torture.
Investigators compare the electrodes to the marks on the victim's body.
The distance between these paired lesions corresponded extremely well with the dimensions of the stun gun in question.
The findings don't prove this stun gun was involved in the crime, but dried blood found on the gun's handle might. The blood is sent for DNA analysis. Within a week, Junior returns from Fiji. The detectives put him under surveillance. Junior spends a lot of time helping his father.
Basically, Sharma Sr. and Sharma Jr. initially impress us as being almost connected at the hip.
The more police see of Sr., the less holy he looks.
People would come to him when they couldn't sell their home. They would think that the home was full of evil spirits. So he'd wave some garlic buds around and chant and walk away with a pocket full of cash and a smile on his face. And people honestly believed that he had these powers.
Police believe Sr. is a con artist. Did he lie to them about his role in Nandita's murder? After a week of surveillance, the detectives have noticed something else. Sharma Sr. controls Junior's every move.
The father was extremely arrogant and domineering over Junior.
It seems highly unlikely that Junior acted alone. Back at the station house, Mulligan reviews the news videotape made after Nandita went missing.
He had described to a T the clothing that she was wearing at the time that she had left the residence on the 27th of November. Now, I don't know about yourself, but I couldn't tell you what my wife wore to work today. And yet he had obviously made note of precisely what she was wearing.
Sr. makes a point of praising Nandita's good character. Mulligan wants to see that clip again. Nandita was a
wonderful person. During the course of those interviews, he had actually spoken of the victim in the past tense after having just reported her missing.
Mulligan has begun to suspect both Sr. and Junior are involved in the murder. He gets a call from Dr. Martin Queen.
Toxicologic analysis showed elevated level of blood pentazocine, which is a sedating narcotic drug.
Pentazocine is the pain reliever Nandita was on after her car accident. But the high level makes police think she may have been drugged. Could Sharma Sr. have given her the drug without her knowledge?
The victim would have been rendered unable to move her body in a normal manner, almost like a drunkenness.
But why would the Sharmas want to control her? A phone record check turns up someone who may know. The night before Nandita disappeared, there was a long call from her home to a woman named Tara Mulla. The detectives realize they've already interviewed Tara. Tara admits she knew Nandita better than she first let on.
She actually became a friend of the victim's as a result of her visiting the Pandit, Sharma Sr., in a professional sense. She had some demons she wanted to exorcise, and she trusted in his talents.
Tara doesn't want to talk about the phone call. She's afraid of retribution from Sharma Sr.
People were of the firm belief that he had very significant and mystical powers over them. He indicated to people that he had the power to kill them, and many people were very, very fearful.
Sharma Sr. has let it be known he's a master of the dark forces of voodoo. Police have found their investigation into Nandita Advani's murder obstructed. Several potential witnesses have been silenced by their fear of voodoo. It's a new one on Detective Dan Mulligan.
This was one of the beliefs that these witnesses were coming out with. These were statements that were coming to us on a daily basis that were beyond belief. But these people honestly believed this individual had these powers.
Mulligan does what he always does in these situations. He asks Tara Mulla to do what's right by her friend. Eventually, Tara opens up.
The victim confided in this lady on a regular basis and indicated her fear. She wanted to leave. She was desperate to leave this relationship, although she indicated that if I leave, he will kill me.
The night before she disappeared, Nandita told Tara she thought Sharma Sr. had drugged her. He'd been trying to control her ever since she walked in on him when he was sexually abusing a young girl.
She was a witness to the sexual assault. She was going to give evidence against Sharma Sr. in her bid to escape this relationship and convict him.
Mulligan finally understands Sharma's motivation for the murder. Now that police have uncovered motive and opportunity, they await forensic analysis of the physical evidence.
Examination of the blood on the stun guns confirms that it matches the DNA profile of both the victim and Sharma Sr.
Sharma Sr.'s DNA sample had been collected in the first 72 hours of the investigation. The brown spots on the victim's hands also turn out to be Sr.'s blood. Police now believe they know what happened to Nandita Advani. Despite being drugged, Nandita had the strength to call Tara Mulla and confide in her.
And Junior's listening to this conversation. She's indicated that she may be providing evidence in the sexual assault. That's when it hits the fan. Junior comes running downstairs and the scrap is on with Senior jumping in. No question that she put up a fight that day, and to the point where Junior had to run back upstairs, get the stun gun to incapacitate her.
Later that night, they put Nandita's body in the trunk of Junior's car and drove north of Toronto to cottage country.
removing all her jewelry and not having any identification on her person was their means to thwart our efforts to identify the body. Not having been to that neck of the woods very often, no doubt they were confident that that body probably would not be located until the following spring when that picnic area was opened up again.
7 months after Nandita's body was discovered, the detectives make the arrests.
In certain respects, I think he even had himself fooled. At the time of arrest, he was in fact carrying what he referred to as his charms to ward off evil spirits. We suggested to him at the time that maybe his charm wasn't working today.
Shashi Sharma Jr. pled guilty to manslaughter. His father, Sharma Sr., to second-degree murder. A carefully considered murder plan. A plea to the public. Voodoo threats. In the end, nothing could cover Shashi Sharma's multitude of sins. He died in prison of a heart attack in 2003. The stories on 72 Hours are true. The detectives and forensic scientists are the ones who actually worked on the case.